Welcome to StrataCast. On April 14, 2008, the court heard oral argument in Plains Commerce Bank versus Long Family Land and Cattle. The court was asked to consider whether Indian tribal courts have authority to decide a civil lawsuit that involves business dealings between a company owned by a member of the tribe and a bank that owns land on a reservation, but itself is not owned by a tribe member. Tom Getty, of counsel for Bingham McCutcheon and a principal for Bingham Consulting Group, discusses the case. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Getty.
This is Tom Getty. On April 14th, the Supreme Court heard argument in a case involving the jurisdiction of an American Indian tribal court over a non-member, in this case, a bank. In Plains Commerce Bank against the Long Family Land and Cattle Company, the court struggles with an application of at least one of the two exceptions to the general rule in Montana versus United States that tribes do not exercise civil authority and presumably adjudicatory authority over the conduct of non-members in Indian country. That exception is that a tribe may regulate, through taxation, licensing, or other means, the activities of non-members who enter consensual relationships with the tribe or its members through commercial dealing, contracts, leases, or other arrangements. Here, the dispute is between a non-member bank and a land and cattle company incorporated under South Dakota law, but where the majority shareholder interest lies with two members of the Cheyenne River Sioux tribe, Ronnie and Lila Long. While the facts are more detailed than can be recited here, here are some key points. The bank obtained about 2,200 acres of pasture and farmland within the reservation, but owned in fee, which had been deed granted to the bank by the estate of Ronnie Long's father in lieu of a foreclosure. The bank entered into a loan agreement with the Long's Land and Cattle Company, which had been incorporated under South Dakota law in the 1980s, involving various credits and assurances concerning a guarantee from the BIA and collateralized by the company's cattle. Additionally, the bank and the company entered into a two-year lease agreement for the land with an option to purchase. For various reasons, the corporation was unable to exercise the option to purchase or to make loan payments, and the bank proceeded to sell the property to third parties who were not Indians. However, the Longs remained on a portion of the property, leaving the bank to seek their eviction. Because the property and the Longs were on the reservation, the bank requested the tribal court to allow service of a notice to quit on the corporation. Ultimately, this resulted in the Longs, and eventually the company, suing the bank in tribal court on a breach of contract claim and a claim of discrimination based on the conduct of the bank in negotiating the two agreements, and because the bank sold at a lower price to third parties, essentially a tort claim of predatory lending. The tribal court jury returned a general verdict in the amount of $750,000 for the Longs and the company, encompassing all of the claims and awarding interest, all of which was upheld by the Tribal Appeals Court, including against an assertion by the bank that the tribal court lacked jurisdiction. The bank then brought a declaratory relief action in federal court, asserting the tribal court did not have jurisdiction and there was a lack of due process. The Federal District Court and the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals rejected the bank's arguments and found the bank formed a consensual relationship with tribal members and their company, thereby coming within the first Montana exception to the general rule that disallows tribal authority over non-members' conduct on the reservation. Further, the federal court found the tribal tort law that the Longs invoked was the, quote, other means, close quote, by which a tribe may regulate non-member conduct. We recall here that Montana's first exception allows a tribe to regulate non-member conduct through, as the Montana court put it, taxation, licensing, or other means. The question presented by the bank on certiorari to the Supreme Court goes to whether the other means includes the tribe's jurisdiction to adjudicate civil tort claims. It seems to this observer, however, that before passing on by what means the tribe may properly regulate non-member conduct, such as through licensing or taxation, it is important to meet the requirements of the first Montana exception that it applies only to those who enter into consensual relationships with the tribe or its members through commercial dealing, contracts, leases, or other arrangements. The court's post-Montana cases tell us generally that if a tribe has regulatory jurisdiction, adjudicatory jurisdiction follows. Here, we hear the suggestion that the other means of regulating the conduct of non-members includes outright the application of civil adjudicatory jurisdiction of tribal tort law, which seems to put the means before the requisite power. It also seems to diminish the importance of the consensual relationship, one that the court has suggested goes to contractual dealings, not liability and tort. The Longs and their company come to the Supreme Court with an argument that a long-standing commercial relationship existed between the bank and the Long family, and thus the consensual relationship required by Montana's first exception is met. The bank counters that it never had contractual dealings with the tribal members, but only with a state-incorporated corporation. While the Eighth Circuit recognized the company as a tribal member for Montana analysis purposes, as the bank knew it was dealing with a corporation of conspicuous tribal character, the bank argues the loan and lease agreements were between the bank and the Long Company, executed by the Longs only in their capacities as officers of the Long Company. As such, the bank says, the company is equally a non-member of the tribe, and the dispute is not the subject of tribal authority, regulatory or adjudicatory. Several states filing as amici focused on the nature of consent, that in such cases it needs to be particular to the expected tribal jurisdiction and to be actual and clear, not constructive or assumed from the circumstances of the dealings. Other amici supporting the bank, new in one of the bank's arguments, focused on the nature of the bank's land as non-Indian held fee land, and thus, relying on South Dakota versus Borland, tribal power is greatly diminished, and tribal adjudicatory jurisdiction is not warranted altogether. Many of the amici supporting the company and the Longs argue that this is not about a tort occurring on fee land, but instead relates to a long-standing commercial relationship that heightens the tribal interest in civil jurisdiction, particularly since it involves the loss of land once owned by tribal members, demonstrating the nexus between the transaction and the tribal interests and self-government. The United States Solicitor General weighed in on behalf of the company, arguing that Montana's exception for consensual relationships permits tribal regulation through adjudication or tort law. At oral argument, counsel for the bank faced early questioning from Justice Scalia, asking, why shouldn't civil adjudicatory jurisdiction serve as a form of regulation by the tribe? Putting aside whether adjudicatory jurisdiction can be a form of regulatory jurisdiction, justices appear to give little weight to the argument that a tribal court lacks authority to adjudicate disputes growing out of consensual relationships over which the tribe otherwise has regulatory authority under the first exception. Perhaps in yet another testing of the limits of the jurisprudence, Justice Scalia also pressed the bank's counsel on whether counsel thought it was vital to consent that it be expressed in writing, and asked if the tribe's anti-discrimination statute was in writing, would that be enough? Justice Ginsburg followed up on this, going to the idea of notice, whether the non-member doing business knows with whom he is dealing, in this case with tribal Indians. Justice Scalia again jumped in, noting that the commercial dealings here had a, quote, decided flavor of dealing with Indians on the reservation. You're dealing with a corporation that's majority owned or entirely owned by Indians, close quote. Counsel again did not use the opportunity provided by Justice Scalia's question to discuss why the corporation should not be deemed a member for Montana purposes, and responded instead why it would have been better had there been a choice of forum provision in the contractual dealings. Justices Souter and Ginsburg, in a series of questions, were more interested in what was required to establish consent under the first exception. Justice Souter, for example, suggested to the bank's counsel that Montana's first exception does not require an express consent to the tribe's jurisdiction, regulatory or adjudicatory, but only that kind of consent involved in forming, quote, some kind of relationship that would make it appropriate for the tribe to assert regulatory jurisdiction, close quote. The bank's counsel again appeared backed into a corner of arguing that the first exception does not contemplate tribal adjudicatory jurisdiction at all, only licensing and taxation. and Justice Souter saw that reasoning as one where the first exception would have no independent application as to tribal court adjudication unless the second Montana exception were met. Ultimately, the bank's counsel did not give a satisfactory response to Justices Souter and Ginsburg's inquiries as to why, in essence, constructive consent should not be deemed to exist where a tort claim has some meaningful connection to a consensual commercial relationship. Counsel for the company and the Longs spent considerable time discussing the nature of the verdicts and the applicable law in the tribal court. Justices did inquire as to the nature of the corporation and openly questioned whether it could be a tribal member. The court drew laughs when the Chief Justice asked whether Justices Scalia and Alito could form an Italian corporation. However, it led to a serious discussion about when the state incorporates a corporation involving Indians. Does the state create a different kind of corporation when it knows the shareholders are 50% or more Indian? Counsel responded that there is a nexus requirement with, quote, fine gradations in the facts, close quote, and liability has to arise out of a consensual relationship, one which counsel argued existed here. Ultimately, counsel relied on the longevity of the commercial dealings as a major factor. Following oral argument, it is not clear where the court will go with Plains Commerce Bank. It is undoubtedly the case that the justices were spending more time at oral argument testing the limits of counsel's arguments than revealing their own views in the case. It is to be seen whether the forthcoming decision in this case will follow or depart from other post-Montana cases, like Strait versus A1 Contractors, Atkinson Trading versus Shirley, and Nevada versus Hicks, cases that limited the reach of tribal jurisdiction over non-members under the Montana exceptions. Yet the arguments that adjudicatory jurisdiction can never flow from regulatory jurisdiction under the first exception seemed off the mark. Strait and an earlier decision, Iowa Mutual Insurance Company versus LaPlante, strongly suggest, if not established, that when the tribe has regulatory jurisdiction, it has adjudicatory jurisdiction to enforce that regulatory power. The real issues to this observer are, first, whether a state-incorporated company of the sort here, where shareholders are Indian, constitutes a tribal member for the purposes of bringing tribal governmental power to the matter, either regulatory or adjudicatory, under the first Montana exception. And if so, then second, whether consent by a non-member to the application of tribal tort law can be implied from the existence of a contractual relationship with tribal members, at least where the tort grows out of negotiation or administration of the contract. We will learn soon enough what the court thinks.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video from past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at federalistsociety.org/multimedia.